Hello, this is Kathy, and this is the Attleboro Sun Chronicle for Monday, June 8th, 2026. Opioid deaths in Massachusetts fall below 1,000 for the first year since 2013, by Allison Kuznicks. Boston, the number of opioid-related overdose fatalities fell below 1,000 for the first time in more than a decade in 2025, state health officials say, marking a significant improvement since Massachusetts broke a devastating record a few years ago. There were 978 confirmed and estimated opioid-related overdose deaths among Massachusetts residents last year, the Department of Public Health said. That represents a nearly 27% decrease over the 1,336 deaths in 2024, which also saw a sharp drop in fatal overdoses. DPH says the declining trend mirrors data unfolding nationally. This progress experienced by families across the Commonwealth as years of extra joy in life is the result of a comprehensive and collaborative public health response that has prioritized evidence-based care, community partnership, and compassion, Health and Human Services Secretary Kiami Mahani said. Data shows us that providing access to housing, harm reduction, treatment options, and supportive peer communities works to prevent overdose. And the Commonwealth will continue its commitment to supporting and expanding access to these tools and services. In 2024, a law expanded access to overdose reversal drugs like naloxone, installed liability protections for providers and organizations offering drug checking services, and established licensure for recovery coaches. The law did not include a Senate-backed provision to legalize supervision injection sites, and proposals to do so this session are before the House and Senate Ways and Means Committee. Overdose deaths, which claim more than 2,000 lives annually between 2016 and 2023, reached a record high of 2,364 in 2022, the last time Massachusetts recorded less than 1,000 overdoses. Overdose fatalities was in 2013, when the opioid epidemic claimed the lives of 992 Bay Staters. While 27% decrease in opioid overdose deaths is encouraging and reflects the impact of sustained investment in prevention, harm reduction, treatment, and recovery support, we must never lose sight of the fact that behind every data point is a person, a loved one, a family member, a friend, a neighbor. Deirdre Calvert, director of DPH's Bureau of Substance Addiction Services, said. DPH said it is still analyzing the latest data and will release more insights later this summer about how the decrease is reflected across Massachusetts communities. In its recent report on overdoses, the 2024 DPH offered three hypotheses for that year's decrease, including a potentially safer street drug supply, fewer people at risk of overdoses, and expanded overdose prevention resources and services. DPH says overdose deaths rose from 2013 to 2022 due to the increasing in erratic fentanyl concentrations in the drug supply. But xylazine, a sedative approved for veterinary use, has become increasingly common in the state's drug supply between 2020 and 2024. One hypothesis is that using drugs containing xylazine may protect from fatal overdose by increasing the length of time that people are sedated after using, therefore decreasing the total number of use events. The report says, another hypothesis is that due to the sedative effects of xylazine, suppliers may reduce the amount of fentanyl in their product. A second person arrested in Rehoboth drug raid, by Stephen Peterson, Sun Chronicle. Rehoboth. A second person has been arrested on drug charges following a police raid of a home and business property on Winthrop Street, Route 44, last week. Matthew O'Brien was arrested Thursday night as a fugitive from justice with the help of the Providence Police, Rehoboth Police said. O'Brien was charged with trafficking cocaine, distribution of Class B substance, trafficking fentanyl, and other drug offenses, police said. O'Brien had been wanted for drug violations after the June 1st search of a 370 Winthrop Street, the address of OB's services, a towing and auto repair business, and a home, yielded a sizable amount of drugs. Melinda Archambault, 36, of Bristol, Rhode Island, was arrested that day on numerous narcotics charges, and police had said they expected to charge others. Rehoboth and Seekonk police and the Bristol County District Attorney's Office were present for the search. Investigators were seen taking bags of evidence from building. Police found and seized 250.5 grams of cocaine, 13 grams of oxycodone, 7.3 grams of MDMA, 23 grams of fentanyl, 69 grams of methamphetamine, 142 grams of psilocybin mushrooms, and 242 grams of marijuana and additional drugs, officials said. The suspects are scheduled to be arraigned in Taunton District Court. Also, an arrest warrant has been issued for Trent Mason related to the case. E-bike problems taxing Attleboro by Stephen Peterson, Sun Chronicle. City police have been dealing with a skyrocketing number of calls for problems with e-bikes the past year and a half, including one Tuesday where a police cruiser was almost hit head-on by a local teenager riding an e-bike. Since November 2024, police have responded to nearly 50 calls for complaints of juvenile e-bike riders operating in a dangerous and reckless manner, police officials said. In May alone, there were 27 such instances. Most of this activity has been instances of reckless riding, such as playing chicken with drivers, popping wheelies, or opposing lanes, and riding in and out of traffic, officials said. These riders also engage in conduct in which they try to provoke drivers of other vehicles on city streets into physical altercations, as well as attempting to provoke the police into engaging in dangerous pursuits, they said. The stunts are often video recorded by the riders with the intent of sharing within their social media groups, officials added. About 8 p.m. Tuesday, an Attleboro officer was on patrol in a marked police vehicle on Union Street when a rider on an e-bike intentionally entered the lane of travel of the police vehicle, driving head-on towards the cruiser, police said. To avoid a collision, the officer had to come to a complete stop in traffic, at which point the rider at the last minute steered away from the cruiser, narrowly avoiding a collision, they said. As the rider passed, the officer observed the rider holding a cell phone or a similar recording device to record the stunt. The officer tried to stop the e-bike on nearby Pine Street, but the rider sped away at a high rate of speed. As the police officer followed, at one point the rider came to a complete stop and began screaming expletives at the officer in an obvious attempt to provoke the officer to continue pursuing the e-bike, officials said. That continued for an extended period, they said. The officer attempted to de-escalate the situation and engage with the rider while other officers approached the distracted rider. An Attleboro police detective was then able to grab the rider by the arm and he accelerated the e-bike from a complete stop. The rider lost his balance and fell off the bike, officials said. The rider spewed a torrent of obscenities at the officers while being secured in handcuffs and initially refused to identify himself. He was later identified as 16-year-old male city resident, police said. The juvenile's mother responded to the scene and a citation was issued for the vehicular offenses. The juvenile was then released to his mother and is being summoned to juvenile court for charges of assault and battery by means of a dangerous weapon, negligent operation of a motor vehicle, resisting arrest, disorderly conduct, and disturbing the peace, police said. The juvenile's e-bike was seized as evidence. And about 9 p.m. Wednesday, the city police detective observed two subjects loitering near the police department's fenced-in outdoor storage area, which is used to house large items, such as bicycles and e-bikes, when they are seized as evidence or come into the possession of the department, police officials said. Both subjects were dressed in all black, wearing black face masks, officials said, adding one appeared to be acting as a lookout. After some time observing the two and overhearing statements made between them, it is obvious to the detective they were trying to break into the fenced-in area, police said. Multiple officers then responded to the scene, and both individuals fled on foot in different directions. One suspect, a 17-year-old male, Attleboro resident, was then located a short distance away, still on foot, where he was arrested, they said. Officers were able to locate the other suspect at his home after having been picked up by his father on Park Street at the intersection with Pine. That 16-year-old male was arrested as well, officials said. The teenagers were charged with attempting to break in and enter in the nighttime and tampering with an object for use in an official procedure. After being booked, both juveniles were released to the custody of their parents. Both suspects attempting to break into the outdoor storage area are known associates of the 16-year-old involved in the previous night's e-bike incident, officials said. They were believed to be trying to steal their friend's bike. The safety of riders, pedestrians, and motorists is a top priority, and we support efforts by local authorities to address any behavior that violates traffic laws or puts the public at risk, Police Chief Kyle Hagany said. Parents and guardians also play a critical role in promoting safe and lawful e-bike use among young riders, Hagany said. Before allowing minors to operate an e-bike, parents should ensure they understand the local traffic laws, safe riding practices, and the responsibilities that come with operating any motor-assisted vehicle. Ongoing supervision, age-appropriate riding privileges, and discussions about safety can help prevent accidents and reduce dangerous behavior on public roads and pathways. It is not just a citywide problem with e-bike riders. Most area communities report similar problems, and Mansfield and Norton have held public forums to address the issues and adopt regulations to get the situation under some control. World Cup stadiums earn prestigious certifications as green buildings before matches begin. By Jennifer McDermott, Associated Press. Most of the stadiums for this year's FIFA World Cup, including Gillette and Foxborough, have achieved green building status after a push for certification in the run-up to the tournament. As the tournament opens, 13 of the 16 stadiums have earned LEED certifications, the world's most widely used green building rating system, the U.S. Green Building Council said. 10 have been certified since 2024. Through the rigorous process to ensure buildings meet strict sustainability standards. The council expects at least 2 of the 3 remaining stadiums to achieve certification in the coming weeks. Together, the LEED-certified stadiums have installed over 11,500 solar panels to generate clean electricity. Because of the changes made, they will save over 100 million gallons of potable water annually and eliminate more than 5 million single-use plastics annually, according to information shared by the stadiums. 4 venues are reusing, recycling, and composting nearly all waste, preventing it from reaching a landfill. Going to be able to achieve cost savings, and they are also going to be improving their indoor air quality, said Ryan Juan Jacobson, a managing director at the U.S. Green Building Council. That would then support the fan experience and improve team performance. FIFA has committed to reducing its greenhouse gas emissions by 50% by 2030 and reaching net zero carbon emissions by 2040. The tournament's use of existing stadiums avoids the carbon pollution that comes with venue construction for large sporting events. And achieving the sustainability designation means these stadiums have demonstrated efficient use of energy and water, improving air quality and reduced waste. Still, scientists warn that this will be the most polluting World Cup to date, largely because of air travel required for fans and teams transiting across North America and the tournament's expansion from 32 to 48 teams. Air travel is a significant contributor to climate change because burning jet fuel releases carbon dioxide. The tournament will generate more than 9 million metric tons of carbon pollution, the same as nearly 6.5 million average British cars being driven for an entire year, according to a report by Scientists for Global Responsibility, the New Weather Institute, and other environmental sustainability groups. How LEED works. The U.S. Green Building Council introduced the first version of its flagship LEED rating system in 1998, testing it with 19 projects. Since then, it has become the global standard for designing, constructing, and operating healthy, efficient, and cost-saving green buildings. The council creates and updates the standards while its sister organization, Green Business Certification Incorporated, certifies the projects. Projects earn points in categories including energy, atmosphere, water efficiency, and indoor environmental quality. Points correspond to a level of certification: certified, silver, gold, and platinum. LEED certified buildings typically use about 25% less energy, reduce carbon emissions by about 34%, and use 10% less water than conventional buildings, according to the council. There are 51 LEED-certified professional sport venues in North America, the vast majority in the U.S., the council said. And there's a total of about 150 certified sports venues in North America, which includes collegiate stadiums and arenas. The USGBC recently launched a map to spotlight certified stadiums. It's showing soccer and baseball stadiums in addition to the World Cup venues so far, and the map will later be expanded. The impact of green building strategies. Garrett Whittemere, director of stadium services for the Kansas City Chiefs, said FIFA encouraged host venues to become LEED certified, and the timeline was certainly challenging. But, he said, it was attainable for GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium because they had already been making changes in recent years to become more sustainable. Those include daily sorting to divert over 90% of trash from local landfills in 2025, adding biodigesters for food waste, installing LED sports lighting, limiting water flow in sinks, and automated urinal flushing. Their reusable cup program prevented about 100,000 plastic cups from becoming trash. We are continuously looking for ways to reduce the negative impact of large events on local communities and the environment, Whittemere wrote in an email. The oldest of the venues, 60-year-old Estadio Azteca in Mexico City, reached the highest tier of LEED certification in October. Jacobson said it demonstrated how older venues can meet modern sustainability standards. Latin America's largest soccer stadium with 87,500 seats reduced indoor water use by 36% using efficient fixtures and reduced energy use by nearly 45% with efficient heating and air conditioning equipment and new lighting. Officials developed a program to reduce waste and a policy to purchase sustainable products, including toilet paper. Felix Aguirre, deputy general manager of the stadium, said it was an opportunity to elevate sustainability and position the venue as a benchmark for responsible sports infrastructure. Aguirre said achieving this in about 1 year was an extraordinary accomplishment given the age and original conditions of the facility, with some spaces that had never had adequate ventilation systems. Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California, Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia, and Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta participated in LEED prior to host cities being announced in 2022. The rest earned certifications since early 2024. The other LEED certified stadiums are BMO Field in Toronto, Estadio, BBVA in Guadalupe, Mexico, AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, Hard Rock Stadium in Miami Gardens, Florida, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey, BC Place in Vancouver, and Estadio Akron in Guadalajara, Mexico. The stadiums that will host the most matches are certified. AT&T Stadium will host 9 matches, the most of the 16 sites. It achieved gold certification in March. Scott Woodrow, the assistant general manager of facilities, said they had previously invested in energy efficiency projects that would help if they ever pursued LEED. The World Cup gave them a reason to achieve it, he added. They spent more than $7 million adding high-efficiency heating and cooling systems, water fixtures, and sustainable lighting, Woodrow said. A consultant estimated 16% reduction in overall energy use. MetLife Stadium, which will host 8 matches, including the final, achieved gold certification in May. It focused on using solar energy, efficient lighting, and hybrid and electric vehicles, as well as diverting waste from landfills. President and CEO Ron Van Deen said in a statement that the certification shows how premium guest experiences and rigorous green building practices can go hand in hand. AP sports writer Carlos Rodriguez in Mexico City contributed to this report. Graduation 2026. King Philip graduates urge to learn from failures by Madison Dunphy, Sun Chronicle. The nearly 300 members of the King Philip High School class of 2026 gathered alongside their friends and family Sunday, where they were left to remember to grow and learn through their future failures to make something beautiful out of it. Graduates entered the ceremony at Stonehill College, donning their green robes, many with decorated graduation caps. Superintendent Rick Dorlot was first to speak following the National Anthem Pledge of Allegiance. He encouraged the class to keep in mind that they will learn more from losing at things than they ever will from winning. When you experience a loss or things don't go your way, remember it's a learning opportunity, Drolet said. How privileged we are to live our life, have opportunities to better ourselves and learn and grow. Jim Lahan, chair of the King Philip School Committee, reiterated this point, telling the graduates that while they will experience failure, as everybody does, they shouldn't let it stop them from moving forward toward their goals. Failure is a stepping stone, a success. Embrace it. It will strengthen you, Lahan said. Do not underestimate the impact you can have. Stand for what is right, not what is popular. Principal Nicole Bottomley celebrated the class for how they have treated one another over the past 4 years and how the same mindset should carry on in their future endeavors. Chase the opportunities that excite you, take risks, dream big, but just as importantly, be a person who treats others with respect, Bottomley said. Class President Logan Riley implored his fellow classmates to invite more people into their lives, as talking with others will make them a better person. I cannot stress enough how drastically quality of life improves when you invite more people into your life. Please, I beg, just talk to more people, Riley said. Salutatorian Lauren O'Bara shared her routine of making her own lunches throughout her senior year, calculating that she had 111 chicken breasts and 111 sweet potatoes. Through this routine, she shared with her classmates that while some may know exactly what is next, and many of them may not, success is shaped by the habits they build. So at the beginning of this next chapter, I hope you remember the future won't be determined by one exam, one interview, one semester, or one setback. It will be shaped by the habits we build, the effort we give, and the choices we make every single day, O'Bara said. Valedictorian Arush Patolia encouraged his fellow graduates to focus on experiences they have had along the way before arriving to their destinations in life, just as they did in high school. As we all leave this school and find ourselves in a new phase of our lives, we're going to be presented with opportunities that don't come with guaranteed rewards at the end. I ask you all, especially those who haven't found that future calling or job, to not chase the end reward, but the experience, Petola said. This fuels passion, and passion is what fuels life. From unfilled gas tanks to fewer frills, retailers see U.S. consumers rethink their spending. By Ann D'Incienzo, AP writer, New York. U.S. consumers haven't stopped spending money since the Iran war drove up fuel prices, but many shoppers are reassessing what they buy and where, according to company executives and retail analysts. The behavior changes observed so far are subtle, such as altered routines for buying gasoline and fewer visits to clothing and furniture stores. They also are uneven across the population. During recent earnings calls with analysts, executives from American mainstays like Walmart, McDonald's, and Dollar General cited overall shopper resilience as well as noticeable cutbacks by lower-income customers. But the new signs of strain cited by the major realtors as generous income tax refunds help shore up their sales make some economists and analysts think they will see a wider retrenchment when the refunds are gone and consumers face the cumulative impact of more expensive gas and higher prices for food, clothing, insurance, and other goods and services. Trevor Chapman, communications executive in West Hills, California, said that instead of going to a local independent gas station, he and his wife now plan their fuel stops around Costco stores with filling stations. The couple also is doing more online food shopping to avoid impulse buys, he said. Gas is a kind of catalyst, Chapman said. It trickles down into the entire budget. We're trying to keep everything as normal as possible, but it's starting to feel like it's adding up more and more. Well before the U.S. and Israel launched the war, many consumers already were being more choosy with their discretionary purchases, fatigued by several years of stubborn inflation and tariffs on imported goods imposed last year. The U.S. Commerce Department reported last week that higher prices, not more purchases, accounted for most of the growth in Americans' spending in April, when a key inflation gauge reached the highest level since October 2023. Topping up instead of filling up. Members-only warehouse stores like Costco, Walmart, Sam's Clubs, and BJ's Wholesales have seen more traffic at their fuel pumps since the war began in late February, according to the companies. Fuel typically costs less than at the wholesale clubs. But many drivers are not filling their tanks up. Walmart Chief Financial Officer David Rainey told analysts late last month, for the first time since 2022, Walmart customers and Sam's Club members are buying an average of less than 10 gallons per trip, he said. That's an indication of stress, Rainey said. Costco's members are also making changes. They are visiting store gas stations more frequently to top up in between what would have normally been a gap between getting the tank to empty because of the concern about what the gas price might be tomorrow. Meanwhile, the gas price surge has hurt convenience stores where 80% of all fuel is sold in the U.S., according to Jeff Leonard, vice president of the National Association of Convenience Stores.